Greetings to the brightest audience in the country, and welcome to Theology Thursday. I'm Nicole McBurney. Every weekday, we bring you the news of the day, the culture, and science from a Christian worldview, but today, join me and Pastor Bob Enyar as we explore the source of our Christian worldview, the Bible.
Exodus chapter 21, now verse 22. If men fight and hurt a woman with child, and we know that abortion is huge in America as a battle, and this passage is about abortion. If men fight and hurt a woman with child, she's a pregnant woman, so that she gives birth prematurely. This is not a miscarriage. This is a premature delivery. So we call this a preemie, a little baby. Men fight and hurt a woman with child so that she gives birth prematurely, yet no harm follows. He shall surely be punished accordingly as the woman's husband imposes on him, and he shall pay as the judges determine. And we cover this in some depth in God's criminal justice system, but this woman here is not the mother now of a child who's died as though it were a miscarriage and that's the end of the story. That, unfortunately, is the way many Christians have presented this, and it's completely wrong. And when they say it's a miscarriage, then they say, well, the baby dies, and so this statute only has to do with whether the woman is injured. And if the woman is injured, then you punish the man, but it has nothing to do with the baby. And that's flatly not true. If that were true, if God were only talking about collateral damage when a crime is being committed, he wouldn't have to complicate it with having the woman pregnant. It'd be if a man is assaulting another man and during the fight he injures his wife, then he gets punished for that too. But he says if the woman is with child, if she's pregnant and she is injured so that there's a premature birth, then he shall be punished accordingly. And we find out how. If any harm follows, then you shall give life for life, eye for eye, tooth for tooth, hand for hand, foot for foot, burn for burn, wound for wound, stripe for stripe. An eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth is God's idea. Christians, when they utter that phrase, if it's with disdain and reproach. Like it's an evil phrase, an eye for an eye and a tooth for a tooth. But it comes from the mouth of God. And it's his command to Israel. If somebody kills an unborn child, then he should be put to death. Now in this story, it's accidental. He's committing a crime. It's an assault. And we could see from the principles God lays out that if a man is committing a crime and unintentionally there's collateral damage, other people get hurt, he's responsible for all the harm that he's caused. If somebody's breaking into a home and an elderly person hears him and gets up and falls, has a heart attack and dies, then the thief breaking in is responsible for her death. This is why this passage is one of the many reasons why we support the recriminalization of abortion as a capital crime. Abortion is a capital crime. In my novel, The First 5 Days, and our video, The 100-Day Plan, we execute those in the novel. Actually, some woman gets executed, two of them, for abortion. But not only for committing an abortion, for killing an unborn child, but for conspiring to kill a child or advocating the killing of a child. Like if someone advocates that people go and kill the president, is that considered a crime? It absolutely is. What if they advocated, let's go and kill the mayor? That should be a crime too. I mean, if they're seriously advocating that people go and commit murder, that's conspiracy. And in the Bible, it's clear if you commit conspiracy to commit a crime, then you're guilty as though you had committed the crime itself. Matt Drudge quit this past week or so, he had a weekend talk show on Fox News Channel, and he quit over this issue of abortion because he's the guy, conservative, a talk show host, very pro-life. I don't know that he's a Christian, but he's the guy who broke the Monica Lewinsky story, and he's been reasonably reliable. So his popularity has just exploded, mostly on the internet and now recently on Fox. And he was the number one show Fox News had all weekend long. Well, on his own show, he was going to present this little picture of a baby that you guys may have seen. If not, it's at shadowgov.com on our gallery. You can click. But this little baby, about 20 weeks old, the doctors knew had spina bifida. And they have a new treatment where they can make a dramatic difference in his chances for success. And dealing with spina bifida is, they're really having a lot of progress. So the doctor did basically like a cesarean, only the baby wasn't ready to be born yet. And opened the mom's womb, the uterus, and is operating on the little baby inside. And this picture is of the baby reaching up out of the mom's womb and grabbing onto the doctor's finger and holding on. That is some picture. It's very dramatic. And Matt Drudge wanted to show the picture. All you could really see from the angle of the picture he chose, it was all on video, the whole operation. And it's been in the media, that video. He wanted to just show the little baby's hand grabbing onto the doctor's finger. That's all he wanted to show. It's a cute little picture. It's astounding. And the executives at Fox would not let him air the picture. He was going to make the point that we're aborting, we're killing these little babies. And if the little baby is able to do this, it's not a blob of tissue. That's all he was going to do. And they, on his own show, their most popular show, they would not allow him. This is the bastion of free speech, right? Fox, liberals, diversity and tolerance, and we respect all people and all views and all positions. They wouldn't allow the picture of a baby holding onto a doctor's hand. Isn't that astounding? So Matt Drudge said, it's your network. You can do with it what you want. I quit. And, yeah, amen. That is so good that he did that. Because now millions of people have seen that picture. Millions, far beyond what his show would have brought it to. And people are all waiting for the baby to be born December 28th, 1999. He may be a Y2K baby. Did we say that last week? I don't recall. No. He might be a Y2K baby. And so we're very excited that Matt Drudge had the courage to stand up in that way. And who knows how it'll affect his career, but for these unborn kids. But that little baby, think of anyone hurting that baby and the emotion that would rise up within you and the anger. And I cannot wait for God's vengeance to pour out on abortionists like Warren Hearn in Boulder or Patrick O'Loughlin in Denver, who works at Planned Parenthood, or all over the country. Because there are people who are brutal and they're murderers and they do it because they hate God. That's their number one reason. And then they do it for the money and other reasons, but mostly because they hate God. And I wanted you guys to know, for years on TV, I've told the Patty Krangle story. She worked for Planned Parenthood. Anybody recognize her name? Patty Krangle? See about maybe a third of you? Well, the Patty Krangle story in 30 seconds is when Operation Rescue came to Colorado, the headquarters moved to my basement in my home for the state headquarters. And one of the weekly workers, volunteers for Operation Rescue, was Patty Krangle. She was in it from day one in Colorado, the pro-life movement to close down abortion mills, only she worked for Planned Parenthood. She was a mole. She was a spy, undercover agent. She was getting paid by Planned Parenthood to work on our staff. Well, and that's how serious the stakes are. The moment she walked into our house, we knew she was a plant. We knew it the moment she walked in. She had been working in their first location for about 6-8 months, something like that. And she came in, and we knew she was a pro-abort. She was not a Christian. And so the first job we gave her to do, because I became the office manager, since it was in my house, just de facto, I said, Patty, what we need you to do is we have about 15 videos, pro-life videos against abortion, but we don't have a table of contents for them. So we need to know what's in them, so we'd like you to watch them all and write out a table of contents for each one. Now, some of them were over 2 hours long. So she had a long job. She watched all those pro-life videos. And after that, we had her call every OBGYN in the whole state of Colorado and do a poll. And we never let her get at her the data for the mailing list ever again from the moment she came into our house. And we were just able to discern she's a pro-abort. She's a phony. Well, pro-life friends went to a restaurant recently, and these are friends who pick it all the time at Planned Parenthood. And at the next table was Patty Krangel and her husband. And I got to tell you what happened. Patty Krangel's husband works for a computer software company downtown. He's got a coworker who's been pro-abortion, evolutionist, atheist for years. And that coworker, his wife, started watching my show. She's a local news reporter. Newscaster. Well, she had been a Christian young, but sort of fell away, and she became on fire Christian over about 6 months. Well, he got saved, and he became a total nut right-wing Christian.
Hallelujah!
So, radically pro-life, against evolution, Christian, just fabulous guy. What a family now. And he starts hammering Patty Krangel's husband, saying, abortion is murder, and we didn't evolve from slime, and there is a God. And he brought him to church, a good Baptist church, Valerie. Brought him to Riverside Baptist Church. And so our pro-life friends just ran into them, and they just told me the story, and I was blown away. Patty Krangel invited them over to talk and said, we're not a part of that anymore. And she said, you guys better watch out because they're out to get you. And she gave them tips on what to do and not to do. And she was totally sincere. And she was so kind. And they were shocked, startled. So I'm hoping to get to talk to Patty Krangel again. I don't know. And did her husband become a Christian? I mean, the way she talked to our good pro-life friends, they're not pro-choice anymore. That's the way she talked. I don't know if that's true. But what a dramatic change. Isn't that something? So there's a battle going on, and Christians have forgotten that God put in the Bible that if a criminal kills an unborn child, even accidentally, that criminal should be put to death. What if someone murders a child intentionally? Obviously, God demands the death penalty. And I have a dear friend who's now with the Lord, who spent years in prison in California, a federal pen, because he arranged an abortion. He did it many years ago when it was illegal. And he, in prison, realized what he had done was wrong. It was murder. And he became a Christian. And he was a radical pro-lifer for all the years that he and I were friends. And he died just about a year ago, and he's with the Lord now. Okay, verse 26. If a man strikes the eye of his female or male servant and destroys it, he shall let him go free for the sake of his eye. All right, now corporal punishment was permitted, but not permanent injury. So, and if he knocks out the tooth of his male or female servant, he shall let him go free for the sake of his tooth. And now we get into animal control laws. If an ox gores a man or a woman to death, then the ox shall surely be stoned, and its flesh shall not be eaten. But the owner of the ox shall be acquitted. Right? So it's not your fault if your animal hurts someone. But the plot thickens. What if it's negligence? The next verse, 29. But if the ox tended to thrust with its horn in time past, and it has been made known to his owner, and he has not kept it confined so that it has killed a man or a woman, the ox shall be stoned, and its owner also shall be put to death. If there is imposed on him a sum of money, then he shall pay to redeem his life whatever is imposed on him. Now, we'll talk about the ransom to redeem his life in a moment, but notice if an ox, this is what a judge is supposed to be able to do. A man's property caused some damage or even death. Is he responsible or not? Is he liable? Under certain circumstances, he is. Under others, he's not. A judge should be able to determine right from wrong. And to do that, do you need millions of laws? And do you need hundreds of pounds of law books to help you figure it out? You don't. But with millions of laws like we have in this country, and lawyers who go to school for 30 years or so before they're ready to start practicing, I want to give you an example of the fruit, of the result. I have an Associated Press article here from this past Friday, November 26, 1999, out of Miami. This is a shooting that happened in a Ramada Hotel parking lot. It's in the parking lot. Two guys got shot. They sued the hotel for not having sufficient security, and they won $1.7 million in a jury verdict. Now, our society is so criminal. To think that a private business could offset the crime wave that's swept over this country is absurd. But if that were the extent of it, it'd be somewhat understandable. But you guys are going to flip when you hear the story, right? I'm tempted to read it to you because you won't believe me. Tempted to read it to you. From Miami, Associated Press. Two men who police suspect were shot in a drug deal gone bad have won a $1.7 million jury verdict against Ramada Inn. They were the drug dealers. They were the ones buying a major drug buy that went bad, and two of three of them got shot. So let's see now. They claim that Ramada Inn should have provided better security. Jerry Woods, 53, and Eddie Talley, 58, sued Ramada for negligence. The hotel's attorney and police say the verdict was preposterous, but not surprising. That's a good one. The trial judge. Now, when the police got there, everybody had scattered, including the two guys who got shot. So that tells the police something. The police go to track them down, and they get the three guys that were there. They were all friends, and they got the one guy in his van. He had an expensive electronic scale and $38,000 in cash in a duffel bag. He was a three-time convicted felon, and he said the cash was to buy real estate and the scale was for jewelry. Okay, and the crack cocaine and the drugs in his jacket, he didn't have a good excuse for them, but... And they would not cooperate with the police at all, so the police never got any description, clues, or evidence for the shooters. Right? So they were there to buy drugs. That's why they were there. And they didn't want to get in trouble, so even though they were shot, they tried to get away. The judge, the trial judge, would not allow the jury to hear any evidence regarding the drug deal and that these guys were there to buy a large quantity of drugs. He wouldn't allow the jury to hear that. So it's irrelevant, he said. It would have unfairly tainted the case. So the Ramada Inn is, you know, they're throwing a fit. They say the jury heard half the story. And the two guys, their attorney said it was the right decision. You know, he gets 30% of the money, of course. What an absolute tragedy that's what judges today are capable of. And we've got cases like this. The police stop some, you know, car, and the guys get out and run, and the police see there's all drugs in the car, and they get, you know, kilos of cocaine, and the judge says, you didn't have any probable cause. It's like, to the police, He said, well, we stopped these guys and they ran. And the judges today say, so that doesn't show anything. That's what a judges show say. So God expects that judges use common sense. But the more laws we have, the less common sense can operate. Because there are laws for every circumstance. And no one's responsible. Because this idiot judge could point to some ruling, some law, some precedent, and say, I was only following the law. Which is not really true, but he could make a great argument for that. So God expects that if an animal injures someone, the judge could determine whether or not there's liability on the part of the owner. Now, verse 30, if there's imposed on him a sum of money, then he shall pay to redeem his life whatever is imposed on him. Now, he's not a murderer, right? But he was negligent in a case where someone died. If he were a murderer, then he could not ransom his life. Numbers chapter 35, verse 31. Moreover, you shall take no ransom for the life of a murderer who is guilty of death, but he shall surely be put to death. All right, now the negligent, unintentional homicide, he can be ransomed instead of executed upon the judge's order. And such a ransom then, the money he'd have to pay to redeem his own life would go to the victim's family. This law reinforces and prefigures the salvation provided by Christ. When he redeemed us, he became our ransom. Because we should pay the penalty for what we've done. We should. We should not be redeemed. But God, being merciful, will allow the penalty to be paid in a different way. And Christ paid our debt. And therefore, our lives, when we come to Christ, are spared. Let's go to verse 31. Whether the ox has gored a son or gored a daughter, according to this judgment, it shall be done to him. So the judge's ruling shall stand. People do not have the right to appeal the judge's decision. Higher level judges, a higher court, could interfere with a lower court's ruling, but it would be on their own initiative. The general public, they do not have authority over a judge. Conservatives go in cycles, and now many of them are thinking, if only the people can vote for judges, vote to put them in, vote retention or don't retain, then we'll get better judges. And what the conservative leaders don't realize is these are the people who vote for Jerry Springer to make him number one. So the people will vote for Barabbas rather than for Jesus in mass. The people will vote for Larry Flint rather than for Billy Graham, as we saw on Politically Incorrect this week. So we cannot trust, we can't think that the majority is our ally. Verse 32, if the ox gores a male or female servant, he shall give to their master 30 shekels of silver, and the ox shall be stoned. Now the medium of exchange here, notice, is precious metals. Here, silver. And God could have said some other medium of exchange, but because it's precious metals, they tend to keep their value over great lengths of time, over centuries or thousands of years. You know, an ounce of gold back in the Old Testament times is worth somewhere around what an ounce of gold is worth today. If you want to see how many loaves of bread you can buy or how many changes of clothing. Well, this here is 30 pieces of silver, 30 shekels of silver. And recall that Christ was sold for 30 pieces of silver. And he was impaled on the horns of the altar, the heavenly altar and its horns, just as the ram had its head caught by its horns in the thicket, and as Christ had the crown of thorns thrust upon him. Verse 33, and if a man opens a pit or if a man digs a pit and does not cover it, and an ox or a donkey falls in it, well, we could see negligence coming up here again, right? The owner of the pit shall make it good. He shall give money to their owner, but the dead animal shall be his. So you reimburse the owner for the value of the living animal because you uncovered a hole, you didn't cover it up, and the animal fell in and was injured or killed. So you reimburse the owner for the value of the living animal, and you keep the carcass. Very fair. You pay for a live horse, you get a dead one in this circumstance. So men do not want to be negligent when they know they're going to have to pay. If one man's ox hurts another, and what would happen if that occurred today? What would the property owner say? Sue me. I've got a lawyer. And so then the poor victim will have to hire a lawyer. And the victim might not have enough money for a lawyer. In fact, now his donkey's dead. And he's in bigger financial strait than he was the day before. He has to hire a lawyer to get justice. That's corrupt. That's absolutely corrupt. If one man's ox hurts another so that it dies, then they shall sell the live ox and divide the money from it. And the dead ox they shall also divide. So these are simple principles of justice so that society could live in harmony. Verse 36. Or if it was known that the ox tended to thrust in time past, and its owner has not kept it confined, he shall surely pay ox for ox, and the dead animal shall be his own. Responsibility. So it was your fault, now you got to pay for the ox. Do you think God would let those drug dealers sue Ramada? No. Would a judge who honored God, who for its only textbook had the Bible, would he let those drug dealers sue Ramada? Of course not. How about a child who was 10 years old, who hardly knew anything, but was just explained in a 10-minute session principles of right and wrong? He wouldn't allow the drug dealers to sue the hotel. But our system is completely corrupt virtually it's completely corrupt because we have rejected God. We've mocked God. We've said the Ten Commandments are not allowed and we cannot honor God with our laws. And so we've alienated ourselves from Him and His blessing. And you know what, Ramada? They deserve it. They really deserve it. This is just their operating cost because they're one of the nation's leading retailers of pornography through their in-room movies. So some Christians boycott Ramada. And now they're just reaping what they've sowed. They sow immorality, so the immorality is coming back in just another form. God says, you sow to the wind, you will reap the whirlwind. Someone just a couple weeks ago said to me, well, the Ten Commandments are not law because law has penalties. And they don't have penalties. They just say, don't murder, don't steal, don't commit perjury. And I said to him, well, don't you recall that Exodus 21 gives the penalties in 22 and 23 and in Numbers and Deuteronomy? God talks about the penalty for perjury.